Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's BudPod 190.
190.
Yeah.
I'm feeling feisty for the big 200. We're only 10 away from 200.
There's a chance that
Double century,
not out. There's a chance that 200 will be occurring around the time of the first ever live Bud Pod.
Oh, that'll be nice. Oh, imagine if the live Bud Pod just happens to be the 200th.
Spooky.
200. Spooky pooky.
The 200. Spooky wookie. The sweet 200, yeah. We're looking into another live Bud Pod date because the first one sold out to Patreons only in 3 hours, which is positively terrifying.
Yes, terrifying in a good way, like a good horror movie.
Oh, God.
Speaking of which, last night, I watched, for the first time, Pierre, The Wicker Man, the original Wicker Man.
Ooh.
From 1973.
Very nice. What did you think?
I loved it.
It's good,
isn't it? I thought it was so good. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I really like the masks, and I like the sort of naked lady dancing.
Yeah, the naked lady dancing, the fucking on the beach. It's so truly weird, but captivating. And the soundtrack slaps. The soundtrack is like, it's weirdly great. It's all these sort of creepy folk songs.
Yeah. Yeah. And anything with lots of sort of lutes and people go, la, 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 like weird choruses.
It's really good. I hadn't realized just how much Midsommar took from it.
Yeah. It's the classic piece of folk horror, I suppose, cinematically.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so great. I thought it was so, so good. And I'm becoming like a sort of boring film snob, anti-effect, anti-special effect person.
Yeah.
Because there isn't a single special effect in the whole movie. It's just people doing weird shit in weird clothes in a remote place, and it's really effective. It's all you need. It's all you need.
Yeah. There's not like some sort of CGI kind of magic thing happening. It's just human unsettlingness.
Yeah.
And not a mobile phone in sight.
And there's a young Christopher Lee, a young Saruman, not a mobile phone in sight. It's true. But it's so much of horror, so many horror premises are now ruined by the existence of mobile phones, because you can just look up where you are, you can just go on Google Maps. All horror movies set in modern times now have to have a beat where they show the character has no signal.
Yeah, or like the creepy dude showing you around. It's like, oh, you'll find it quite impossible to access the internet here.
Every movie has to have this disclaimer now.
Yeah, every movie has to stop in the middle of the atmosphere creation process and go, and there's no mobile signal. Anyway, so this guy. It's such a tedious little interruption.
I mean, they have one in Midsommar, don't they? What do they do in Midsommar? Do they have
The creepy beardy guy says something like along those lines.
He does, doesn't he? Right, yeah.
Oh, we're very far from in the mobile phone mast, so hee-hee-hee, and they all go, ooh, this is real. And then, you know.
Ah, digital detox.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's very good to hear, and I think you're right about the effects. I mean, have you seen Terry Gilliam's Brazil?
No.
I recommend watching it purely because of how amazingly it is. Its visuals are amazing, and it's all like models, like the original Star Wars.
Oh, okay. Not like just not really hot people. Just not lots of really hot people.
No. Like physical models. Although, you know, the cast are still celebrities, so I guess they're inherently going to be pretty hot.
That's true.
It's also just a very good film, but generally speaking, like watching it, you go, wow, this does just look so much better without...
It is so much better.
...bad 3D, like PlayStation 2 cutscene fuckery.
Bad real effects are better than good computer effects, I swear to God. Like in the original Jurassic Park, where it's just like... And it's good, I guess, but sort of animatronic head of a dinosaur doing the same movement again and again, going... It's still better than having it in 3D.
Yeah, I mean, I caught a bit of the first Harry Potter movie the other day, and bits of it look wank.
That's it. That's it. Sort of, yeah, computer graphics age as well. They age in a way that practical effects don't age.
That's the thing. Like, that's the crazy thing about Brazil. I think Brazil is from the 80s, and it looks great. Same as the original Star Wars, because it's like... incredible oil painting on a sheet of glass is the scenery behind them, you know.
Yeah, very cool. And the Wicker Man, the actual Wicker Man in the Wicker Man, is a proper actual Wicker Man.
They made a Wicker Man.
They made a Wicker Man and they burnt a Wicker Man. It's sick. It's so good and so weird and creepy. I loved it. Absolutely loved it. Maybe one of my favorite movies ever. I loved it. Yeah, I'm slightly becoming a horror boy.
Okay. Interesting. An interesting life change. An interesting arc for you.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm getting into my horrors. You know, other men as they get older, they buy a sports car or date someone of dubious age appropriateness. But I get into... horror movies from the 70s.
You get really into folk horror specifically.
Folk horror.
You get really into like woodcuts and sort of 1600s exorcism testimony.
Yeah. Yeah. There is one bit though in it where the protagonist, Sergeant Howie, he's trying to figure out what the hell is going on in this weird village. And he goes to the village library and he just finds a book about like folk ceremonies, which describes what they do to the letter. And it's like, why would you have that book in your own library? I guess it's for the, I guess they teach the locals about their ways, don't they? But I feel like there's always a bit in these horror movies where the protagonist will go to a library and find out everything they need to know.
Yes.
About the horror monster. It happens in It as well, doesn't it? The kid, they go to the library and they learn the entire town's history and a history of everyone else in the town seemed weirdly not to know. It's all in the library, easily found, and it explains everything.
I think the realistic part of that is people's desultory knowledge about their own environment. I think that's true.
Yeah, and also no one goes to their own libraries.
Yeah, no.
It's all about the death of the library. That's a true horror story here, Pierre. Yeah. It's the death of local libraries.
That's it. I mean, I once there's a sort of library down the road from me, and I sort of thought, maybe it's better, you know, if I sort of go with my little laptop and I work in the library, not just in a cafe where I have to buy coffee, you know. And so I thought, yeah. Because when I was a kid, I made great use of my local library on the Isle of Man. Shout out to Port Erin Library, next to the dry cleaners.
I imagine that place has a Wicker Man vibe to it.
It's a bit more like a pebble dashed northern town, but then like there would be like a Wicker, I don't know, a Wicker Angel of the North.
Right.
Maybe? Something like that.
But then you also have the slightly sort of weird accent that you can kind of place but can't. I didn't realize the Wicker Man was set in the Hebrides.
Yeah, they didn't lean too heavily into... I'm not sure how authentic the accents were, but I guess they were comprehensible.
They sounded a lot like the accents I've heard from the Outer Isles. They have this weird Scottish accent with the R's roll a bit shorter.
It'll be a lot more gala-sized, that's for sure.
Yeah. I had photographs taken for the Guardian once by this photographer who's quite well known, I think. He's from the Isle of Harris or Isle of Lewis or one of those, and he sounded like they do in The Wicker Man.
Oh, good. It's authentic. Phil and listeners, if you like good folk horror, highly recommend Ben Wheatley's A Field in England.
Okay. Is that a movie?
Yeah, with Michael Smiley and Rhys Shearsmith and some other guy.
Add that to my list.
It's really fucking good. I just think it's one of the best films I've seen, and it's really good folk horror. It's all in black and white.
Lovely.
It's really, really good. Yeah, it is nice. But Phil, my library quest failed because everyone in there was sort of, you know, libraries suit the needs of their community. And in my community, the need is for to cater half the library and two-thirds of the library entirely to children.
Mm-hmm.
The children of the borough, rightly so. And one-third of the library to people who need to learn English or figure out how to fill in quite a lot of official forms.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. My sister is a librarian in Bristol, and you know we're all very impressed and proud of her because it's a very difficult thing to do now to become a librarian because there are just so few jobs.
Yeah.
So it's highly, highly competitive, and she by the sounds of it, the work of a modern day librarian in the UK is mainly helping people file applications for right to stay or you know. Asylum or learning English or a lot of filling government forms and help with computers. It's because for a lot of people, it's the only place they can get a computer with an internet connection and someone
get online,
can guide. Yeah, yeah. So that's the main, and as you say, children. So that is the main work of a library now.
So then I thought I should probably not sit in a chair here with my MacBook. And I'm writing jokes about my bum. What are you guys doing? Thought I'll make space. I'll go back to the cafe. The cafe is fine. I'll sit there.
Was it that level busy that you were sort of taking up space?
It was fairly busy. It was just more that the whole thing felt like this is not what this space is for. So I thought, fair enough.
Yeah, the vibe is the vibe isn't right.
The vibe was off.
The vibe was off.
I can also
sorry everyone. The vibe's off. That's what you do. That's what you say really loudly when you get up at the library.
And I tip over a massive spiraling shelf of kids' books. Sorry, everyone, the vibe's off. Clang. I point at it on the floor. Vibe's off. I point from all the kids' books
on the
floor.
You knock over one of those ladders on the wheels that a librarian's on the top of. Vibe's off.
Vibe's off. I'm pointing at all the scattered kids' books and the librarian on the floor going, oh, pointing from them. One, two, then back at me. Vibes off. Vibes off. Vibes off. And weirdly, everyone using the library is just nodding really slowly, like, nah, he's right.
You've also recently seen a suspenseful film that you quite liked.
I've seen two. Which one are we talking about?
Oh, the one about the restaurant.
Yes, The Menu.
Yeah, is it good?
I really liked it. It's a bit silly. It's a comedy. It's a horror comedy.
Ah, horror com.
It's a comma. It's a comma. But it's got Ralph Fiennes is in it being unsettling, which is one of my favorite Ralph Fiennes.
He's good at unsettling.
Yeah.
For sure.
He's in there being unsettling with his little blue peepers. And guy who I can never remember who he plays, but always plays a sort of little American worm. What's his name?
The boyfriend character?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
I always think of him as like Cornelius or something, but he's not. He's in like
Cornelius. Nicholas Holt.
Yeah, Nicholas Holt. There you go.
Yeah.
He's always like he's a little English. Dweeb.
Yeah. Yeah, there's something sort of unsettling about him. Again, blue peepers.
He has blue peepers, and also his upper lip is very close to his nose.
Yes.
That can often...
Yes.
That creates a sort of constant smile that can be quite unsettling.
Mm.
Oh my God, he was in Mad Max Fury Road. Was he the bald gremlin man?
He's the guy who says, "What a lovely day." That's him.
Oh my God. Oh, right.
Yeah, I didn't realize. Yeah.
Well, he's very transformative then. And like every popular British actor around our age, Phil, he was in Skins, I'm seeing.
Yeah. That's his big break, Skins.
Never, ever had any interest in watching Skins, I must be honest.
I was just about to say, Skins was not made for you and me.
No.
There's a great bit that Stuart Lee made for, I think, an early Charlie Brooker's screen wipe.
Yeah.
And Stuart Lee talks about Skins and compares it to the coming-of-age TV that he had when he was a young teenager or a tween or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, his TV show was about a girl who had to find herself in a post-nuclear apocalyptic England and had to find her way to survival. And he said he found that less alienating than Skins. Skins makes him feel more lonely than that show about the girl in the apocalyptic wasteland. And I agree. Skins made me, as a sort of gawky, kind of awkward, not particularly cool, not sexually active teenager, Skins made me feel worse. It made me feel more lonely and more weird and more unappealing.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, because it's basically just like, these 14-year-old dipshits are having some kind of weed jacuzzi fuck party. Why aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And
I've never understood the appeal of shows like that.
Even in a show like that, when they have, by necessity, a few characters who are like outcasts, they're always like chiseled, handsome outcasts or beautiful, take off her glasses outcasts. They're never just like slightly dumpy obsessives.
and that was us, dumpy obsessives.
Yeah, that's right. That was the name of our two-man band.
We were dumpy obsessives. We were the schlubby anoraks.
We were the dumpy obsessives and a couple of anoraks, and we both played the drums. That was it. Drums only band. Yeah, man.
But Nicholas Holt is a good actor.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, it wasn't for me.
You watch that, and as you say, yeah, you just think, I'm already not really going to parties when I'm sort of 14, 15.
Yeah, it felt
15.
Like a TV show made for popular kids.
Yeah. Right? It was odd, because the popular kids were probably only watching it on catch-up when they got home from all the cool parties.
Yeah, exactly.
They weren't watching it live. Also, like,
well, speaking of,
yeah,
oh yeah, go on.
Well, just as you say, like it felt almost like CCTV footage of what you and I thought we were missing out on.
Yeah, exactly. It seemed to be sort of confirming all my worst anxieties about my place in the social firmament of teenagehood.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of shit shows, as it were, Pierre, the Qatar World Cup, I'm transfixed by all the shitness of it.
Yeah, social media is alive with the sound of people in inadequate accommodation and confused administration.
So funny. People living, it's like the accommodation looks like Fyre Festival, but in the desert.
Yeah.
They're turning up and it's these thick plastic lined tents, essentially, in the desert. It's like, apparently it's intolerable to be inside during the day.
Yes, that makes sense.
And they have a single fan to keep cool inside the tent. It's hilarious.
It's you know what it is, Phil? It's what happens when you shame the host nation out of providing the cooling system it wanted to, which was a load of trafficked people from South Asia.
Swatting enormous palm leaves.
Yeah. Sort of. Yes, I saw a video of some Everton fan, some guy in an Everton shirt, being like taken by some Qatari local to his sort of desert villa and being introduced to like his pet lion.
Yeah, I saw this. Like this guy just has a chained up lion cub in by his swimming pool, and this scouser's just like, oh my God, wow. He's so comfortable with it. Like, if I was not that close to a lion, the lion's like play biting him and stuff. I'm like, this guy's got balls.
Oh, I was I thought, yeah, I was watching it going, uh-oh, because eventually he's confident because he doesn't, I don't think he fully understands what that lion, even at a young age, could do if it wanted to.
Right, yeah.
So I was just like, oh, yeah. He thinks it's like a big, fun dog. It's not.
Yeah.
Its paws are already the size of this guy's face.
Exactly. It's like getting just old enough that it's starting to look quite dangerous.
Yeah. Very common from what I read and hear. The ultra wealthy in the Middle East seem to do a lot of dodgy exotic animal imports from Africa.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So
it's an important part of football. It's a big part of the beautiful game.
They should bring on the lions, all the locally kept lions on at halftime, and have like an actual sort of gladiator style fight.
Yeah. Yes. Between, yeah.
The lions and the Christians. They just throw a bunch of Christians in there. Just have to fight the lions.
Yeah. Just completely abandon all pretense and go, this is what we like. Just really go for it. That would be great.
You see, Saudi Arabia beat Argentina today.
I was just trying to look up what happened with that. Did they win?
Yeah, they won 2-1.
Oh my god!
Which is not good. Someone you want? No, you want.
That is gross.
You hate to see a country that has a saber on its flag happy. It's not pleasant.
You hate to see a country that beheads wizards win at anything, really.
Yeah, it's a real bummer. So everyone's quite annoyed with I'm quite annoyed with Argentina. Messi scores. They get a penalty in the first half, and it was, from what it sounds like, the Saudi Arabia are really good at what's known as the offside trap, which just means that their back four or back three, if how many defenders have, stay in a very straight line, so that it's very hard for the opposition strikers to get through without being offside. I mean, fundamentally, I've probably misunderstood that a little. But so the Argentina scored 3 goals that were disallowed for offside.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, and then Saudi Arabia won 2 very good goals. They scored 2 very good goals in the second half.
Oh, wow. Oh, okay, so that was like a little sneaky tactic.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it looks like they're good.
Well, they're very motivated, because if they don't win, they're probably going to, one of their relatives is probably going to have a bit of them chopped off. It's good motivation when you know that you live in a country where people are regularly beheaded.
Yeah.
I'm just checking my sources. I say they didn't behead a guy for being a wizard. It was on charges of sorcery and witchcraft. Not the same thing.
Yeah. So be fair, Pierre. Don't mischaracterize them, please. Yeah, in Saudi Arabia, football is actually named after the 2 pieces they cut off first if you lose.
And you don't want to know what they call arm wrestling. That really is. It's just wrestling, but if you lose, you lose your fucking arms.
I was on the last leg, Pierre. On speaking of feet, I was on the last leg on Friday on Channel 4. It was a lot of fun. Posted a couple of clips. I wrote a bunch of jokes about the Qatar World Cup. I didn't manage to say them all. May I read out the ones I wasn't able to do?
Please.
Okay. You might be able to tell why I didn't tell a couple of these.
Okay.
Qatar started building the infrastructure for this World Cup in 2010. They're actually making a movie about it. 12 years, a million slaves. what else yet?
That's great.
It's, you know, performing because the Black Eyed Peas and Robbie Williams performing in Qatar. It's a tough gig, Qatar. You don't want to do too well, because if you steal the show in Qatar, they cut your hands off. I thought I had another really The logo, I don't know if you've seen the mascot for the Qatar World Cup looks like a ghost, which makes sense. It makes sense that Qatar is a very haunted place. It is, after all, built on an Indian burial ground.
Oh, perfect. Very good.
But you can understand why I didn't do that joke on the last leg, which is overall quite upbeat.
Yeah, they like to do a big smile and to do a very sincere appeal.
Yes.
Whereas you're channeling more some classic dark, cynical vibes there, which I think are more effective overall.
I mean, the Indian burial ground joke is really an homage to a Frankie Boyle joke about America, where he said America seems cursed. Well, it is built on an Indian burial ground.
Yes, indeed. A classic Boyle joke. Yeah, I mean, it's odd, isn't it? Because some people have been saying, you're being meaner to Qatar than Russia. And it's like, well, yeah, we were nice to Russia about the World Cup because we thought it would bring them into the fold. Well, look how well that's fucking turned out.
Yeah, the apologists for Qatar, embarrassing. The kind of things people are saying, like, oh, you judge Qatar for the migrant workers. Don't you know that we had slaves 200 years ago? And it's like, how thick do you have to be not to appreciate the difference between having slaves 2 centuries ago and having slaves now? One is clearly worse than the other.
Yeah.
This whataboutery is pathetic, and I don't understand what people are trying to achieve.
Well, the main thing some of them are trying to achieve is that their entire personality and belief system is structured crucially around the idea that the West is always wrong and worse than everywhere else. Mm. So if there's ever an instance where somewhere else is worse than the West, that's just not permitted, unless they are an ally of the West.
Right.
Because then they are part of the West, and then they are bad. So Saudi Arabia is bad because it's friends with America too much, whereas if America switched alliances from Saudi Arabia to Iran, say... then Iran would then become bad, and Saudi Arabia would become noble desert traditionalists.
Yep. Yeah, and you know, Qatar, they're not dumb. They know how to play into this. They're saying things like, you know, everyone is welcome here, but we do ask that people respect our culture, which is a clever way of putting it. Because, I mean, by the looks of it, their culture is... homophobia and slavery, because that's the things they apparently don't want people criticizing.
Yeah, they don't want anyone to mention the truly evil things they do, and they are very clever because they've invested hundreds of millions of bajillions into the West in order to precisely limit this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the backtracking has been... The one thing I wonder about this is who's going to come out of this debacle of a World Cup more embarrassed, Qatar or the West? Qatar or... I mean, FIFA is already, you know, morally bankrupt, and everyone knew that, but who's going to come out of this worse? Qatar or, say, England, who made a big proclamation about wearing this rainbow armband in support of LGBT people, and then when FIFA said, you'll get a yellow card... England went, oh, all right, we won't wear it then.
Yeah. Apparently,
I mean, that's pretty embarrassing.
Apparently Denmark's still going to do it. They just said, well, we're going to do it. Fuck you then.
Really? That'll be impressive. It's so embarrassing for England. I mean, this is the embarrassing thing, right? So England's first match was against Iran. And there was talk before this of, like, you know, not only should we be boycotting Qatar, but should we be allowing our players to play Iran, considering what's going on over there, you know? Should we make a stand by refusing to play Iran? And then England have this U-turn about the armband. Meanwhile, the Iranian captain says out loud on record that he stands with the protesters in Iran. When they play the Iranian national anthem in the stadium, the Iranian players don't sing it. And all the Iranian fans have flags saying women, peace, freedom. of the slogan for the revolution. So England end up getting shown up by Iran in the activism aspect.
Yeah. It's
Iran show more of a moral backbone than England. It was very, very embarrassing for us.
It's deeply embarrassing, and I think the only people who should be more embarrassed than than the England football team or English football in that sense are the people who when old Joe Lycett did his good old stunt with Beckham.
Yeah, which money. I want to say on the record, I knew it was fake money. I texted this to our WhatsApp group, Pierre.
Yeah.
I said, I'm locking this in. It's fake money. He's going to reveal he actually did donate it. And Wang was right. I'm impossible to trick, Pierre. I'm impossible to trick.
I thought
okay,
he was...
sorry, go on.
I thought he was going to go... because he does this kind of... he does these cool like awareness-raising stunts quite a lot. I thought he was going to go full punk with this one, but I was wrong. They're still good, but... the people who should be the most embarrassed, Phil, are all the people who tweeted about it going, oh, it's a disgrace. What about the cost of living? And all the right-wing pundits who are like, oh, what an outrageous waste. He could have given it to the poor. And you go, oh, really? You think the poor should have free money? And they go, well, no, obviously not. Like, if Lycett had tweeted a picture of him wearing a used Rolex, no one would have said anything.
What do you mean? As in, if he'd spent that money on a Rolex?
Oh, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
A used Rolex. You go, look at my new Rolex. The same. I doubt all the right-wing pundits would have quote-tweeted him going, outrageous, they should give the Rolex money to the poor.
Or even if he destroyed a Rolex on... people probably would have cheered him destroying a Rolex, even if it had cost £10,000.
Also, Phil, you and I, unlike a lot of the public, or perhaps even like some of the, unlike some of the right wing commentators, although I don't think so, you and I know how much PR for anything costs. So awareness raising, selling tickets, whatever, just trying to get headlines, is basically impossible. And I mean, like, if you think you could get a front page in various newspapers for $10,000, you're a fucking idiot. That's an incredibly efficient per pound.
Yes, cheap.
Is oh cheap yeah,
for that level of PR to get on BBC News, like to get on BBC News, what, three times?
Front page of the Mirror
for $10,000 is very cheap. It's true. Also, I read, and this might just be Twitter nonsense, but I read a comment saying that the Bank of England will actually just replace destroyed cash.
I think,
is that true?
I don't think it's true in the sense that they keep track somehow of destroyed cash, but it's true in the sense that if the money's no longer in circulation, it sort of invisibly floats back to the Bank of England.
Right. Okay.
I'm not sure, but it doesn't matter. Because we don't have any money anyway.
Yeah, that's true. By the way, quick recommendation on Radio 4 on BBC Sounds. There's Tim Harford, who is very good. I've learned a lot from. He's done this little mini series about explaining the economy, basically going like back to basics and explaining things like inflation and what banks do and all this sort of thing. And it's really good. I think it's called Explaining the Economy on on BBC Sounds. Highly recommended. These are the only 15-minute episodes, and you kind of just learn the basics. It's very good. So that's what I've been doing. Anyway, Pierre, I think we should probably get to some correspondence.
Yes.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Correspondence.
I need to find the right folder. Yeah, I thought Lycett played it very well. I mean, if you want to raise awareness of all this stuff. And you know what? To be fair, I also, like, I hadn't quite... his demands were pretty thin. All he wanted was, like, a statement. He didn't want him to give away all the money.
I thought he wanted Beckham to renounce the deal completely. I thought he wanted him not to do it.
Well, obviously, that's what he wants. But on the Richard Herring podcast, Lycett was saying... Well, even him just admitting, oh, yes, Qatar's not good for gay people would be something. But he said literally nothing.
Right. Yeah.
It wasn't like he was even meeting them in the middle, you know.
Right.
Like, it's not insane to go, I don't like these laws or whatever. And, you know, once you're already worth £400 million, do you really need to film a load of adverts where you go, oh, wow, brilliant, while someone sort of gestures vaguely at the desert?
Yeah, it is peculiar. I think people said he was getting a deal worth £10 million, what Beckham was doing, but then there, I've also heard there's £150 million actually. It's actually much, much more.
I'm sure it's... I mean, they basically have infinite money from what I can tell, so I'm sure it's as much as possible.
I don't know if I'm being stupid here, but what are the Gulf Arab states so rich from? Is it just oil?
Oil and gas, yeah.
Right, that is it.
Yeah.
And right, yeah, okay.
Pre-oil and gas discoveries, they were mostly famous, I think, for pearls.
So when did the Gulf Arab states become very rich? What, the early 20th century?
Well, no, because they were still basically colonies at that point. It was the...
But when was the oil
post-war?
Found? When was the oil found?
I think the oil was found around then, but they weren't getting the money, buddy.
Right. Yeah, you know. Okay.
It was when they were independent and stuff, and there was the whole Gulf of Aden thing. Yeah.
Gulf of Aden.
Yeah, in the 50s. So I'm going to guess that they started really raking in the cash mid to late 50s. Saudi Arabia in the 40s had that big deal with the Americans.
Okay, I get you.
And then by the 70s.
And I guess that's why films in the 70s and stuff, you start seeing sort of Arab-dressed guys as a sort of new character on the scene, the very rich Arab guy.
Yeah, that's true.
It starts to become a thing around the 70s and 80s.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, that's always a good way of tracking social change.
Right, and then there was the oil. Was it the oil?
OPEC.
Yeah, the OPEC crisis, right, in the 70s. Yeah. So that's, is that when the Arab states got together?
That was 78. Yeah, the oil producing economies and countries, something like that. Yeah, the Arab states, but also, I think Venezuela was in that as well.
Anyway, is Russia in OPEC? No, Russia's not in OPEC.
No, I don't think so. But they basically held everyone hostage, yeah. And the Americans. Yeah. It kind of helped Reagan get elected.
Mm.
Luckily, these days, rising fuel prices will never make Americans vote for a lunatic. Do-do-do. Andrew gets in touch.
Andrew, what's the plan, Drew?
What's the plan, Drew? Dear Pierre and Phil, apparently I meant to do something with your names here, but I haven't quite figured out what. Fair enough.
No, it's nice. It's nice to reset from time to time, go back to basics.
Today I listened to the email from your correspondent in BudPod number 137.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Where they said they felt compelled to binge BudPod from the start in order not to miss any in-jokes.
Hmm.
I, alas, feel no
doctors
such compulsion.
Doctors do not recommend.
What?
Doctors do not recommend.
Doctors do
that's,
not
that's
recommend.
That's our catchphrase when this comes up. Yeah.
I, alas, feel no such compulsion / have been cheating on you with other podcasts.
Look, this is an open relationship. Don't worry about it.
And he says, as long as you never meet each other, it's fine.
That's funny.
It's probably true.
I mean, we probably have. That's the thing.
Depending on the podcast. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. But we don't want to know their names.
And I've only heard the episodes as they have been released since Edinburgh this year, where I saw Pierre and liked him so much I decided to research him further. I think this is a year ago now because we're so out of date.
That's funny, the way to put it. Like, he likes you so much he researched you. Like, he tried to figure out how you work, why he likes you.
Yeah, like an unusual dish. What is this?
Yeah, he goes like in those American movies, he goes to libraries and he goes to one of those computers that just has old newspapers on it. And he's like scrolling through old stories.
The microfiche, yeah, and the colors are inverted, yeah. So the text is white and everything else is black.
Yeah, that's it. Find old stories of you.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And just young comedian, Chortle student final list or whatever.
Yeah. Like. New comedian does well in middle spot.
Yeah.
just and he's like, oh my God. And it's just like a younger photo of you just doing quite well at a gig.
Yeah. But because it's all fake for a movie, they've had to sort of smush my face onto just like someone else's head. I always like it in films where they do that, where they've just somehow failed to get pictures of the actor as a younger person.
Oh, do you know what I saw yesterday? It was just the opening bit of it's a new documentary about Hong Kong and the various uprisings and rebellion and protests. Okay. And for the first time I've ever seen in a documentary of this type, they're hiding the identity of the people speaking with AI, with deepfakes.
No.
So they're not blurring the faces. Yeah, they're deep faking the faces. So they're just changing the faces.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
That's amazing and spooky.
Yeah. Spooky. Anyway.
Well, Andrew says, as a casual interloper on the Bud Pod friend group, I can safely say that you have just the right level of in-jokes. Very nice.
Yeah. There's always a danger with in-jokes that the podcast just becomes incomprehensible after a certain point.
Yeah. He says, I
at least don't have the memory to remember more than three in-jokes.
Yes, it's true. They do fade. Andrew says, they're just the right level of in-jokes. They're there for those who appreciate them, but not the main event. And in a way, it's actually quite nice to not know everything. It's kind of like when a sci-fi or fantasy series hints at the fantastic world you never actually see. It gives depth.
That's it. Sometimes the unseen is better than the seen.
That's good, yeah.
You can kind of piece together. You can piece together what an in-joke is.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, exactly. Andrew says, like most people, I love a good in-joke when I'm an insider, but I always feel it's somewhat the fast food of comedy. Irresistible in the moment, but you know it's not really as nutritious as the healthy diet of original material.
That's very good. Yes, that's exactly it. That's exactly really good. Right. I feel the same way about callbacks.
Yeah.
Callbacks are the fast food of stand-up as well.
Yeah,
they feel good, but they're nutritionally empty.
That's the callback theme.
Very good. It ends with the fart, yeah.
Yes. I feel your show is a perfectly balanced food pyramid of the two, and long may it be thus. Anyway, poo and pee and so on. Am I doing it right?
Yeah, pretty good.
You are. You're nailing it, Andrew, I think. I think you're absolutely nailing it. That's a really nice email. It's a nice sort of piece of, like, very sort of astute critique. I liked it.
Very good. Yeah, sort of dispatches from the new front line, the sort of the new recruits.
Yeah.
It's good to hear. It's nice. It's a fresh pair of eyes, isn't it? That is a very useful thing to have.
Yeah, I think that's right. And it's reassuring.
Yes, it is. It's reassuring to know that we make sense to someone who hasn't necessarily listened to us from the start.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we're about to hit 200, Pierre. There's going to be a point at which it just becomes just physically unsafe to listen to the entire back catalogue.
Yeah, it's sort of the kind of thing you can only do if you're trapped on some sort of space station. You know.
Yeah. You need to be Matt Damon in The Martian, really, to get through.
Yeah, he has the time to catch up while he's desperately planting potatoes in the frozen earth.
In his shit, isn't it? He's planting potatoes in his shit, right?
In everyone's shit.
Everyone's shit.
Everyone's.
It's a good movie, The Martian.
It's good. We have an email from Maz.
Maz. And all that jazz.
Nice. She says, derrière fier.
Nice.
She says, I don't know. I thought about it for too long.
So fier is a combination of our two names, yeah.
Yeah. And derrière instead of dear. It's good stuff.
Oh, I get it. I get it. That's good.
Mare says, I've been binging your excellent podcast. Physicians do not recommend. I've been binging your excellent podcast. Being a 40-something South Asian mum with graying hair, a very grown-up job, and a love of watercolor and crochet.
Wow, what a full life.
Very full life.
Very good.
Wow, rich.
Crochet and watercolors.
Wow. Yeah, so being a 40-something South Asian mum with graying hair, a very grown-up job, and a love of watercolor and crochet, an excellent candidate for coolest uncool, by the way. Everyone thinks it's lame, but you can make some incredible things with a little hook. And sometimes crocheters are called hookers.
Oh, that's nice. That's fun.
Yeah.
So yeah, crochet for coolest uncool. Yeah, right. Crochet and sort of... Yeah, crocheting sort of became kind of hip, at least for our generation, which probably just means we're getting old, about 2 years ago, 2-3 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something like that. So given all this, Mare says, I must fall at the very edge of your listener demographic, but this hasn't stopped me achieving full Pistorian status.
Oh, well done, Maz. Well done. Glad to hear that. And we don't know. I mean, we've not really done a census of the ages of our listeners.
No. No.
But from the correspondence, we do seem... I think we capture quite a nice diverse cross-section of society.
I think so. Maz says, I started in the latter half of 2021, and listening to you through a couple of the maddest years in recent history has made for a fascinating and entertaining time capsule. Yes. Recently, my 8-year-old daughter made a bit of a fuss when I accidentally scratched her leg with my fingernail. I rubbed it better, only for her to exclaim, that really hurt, actually. which caused my husband, also a podbud, and me to break into laughter. She was somewhat bemused, and I had to explain we weren't just laughing at her pain. But how do you explain this podcast to a child? It's true. A week later, she heard Phil exclaim, it's all about the cunnilingus.
Oh, no.
When my phone accidentally connected to the smart speaker in the lounge instead of my earbuds in the kitchen.
Oh, no.
I managed to hit stop pretty quickly, and she was more alarmed by the sudden noise than the words, which she thankfully ignored. Anyway.
Well, exactly. That's it, isn't it? When the young child, they don't know what words mean. They can only read on the faces of the adults around them that they weren't meant to hear that.
Yeah. As much as I would love an 8-year-old to start saying phrases like, it's all about the cunnilingus. With, like, real confidence. So, Maz says, anyway, here's what I actually wanted to tell you about. Many years ago, I dated a posh idiot.
Yeah, we've met a few. We know a couple.
Yeah. He had some awful views and did some moronic things.
Hmm.
Yeah. To give you an example, I was not expecting this. To give you an example, he once injected his testicles with saline.
What?
Because he'd heard it makes them swell up and become comically large for a few hours.
No! God. I was like, well, I was genuinely thinking, what posh thing is this guy done? Has he gone fox hunting or said something about immigrants? But he's injected his balls with saline. Oh, no.
It'd be very funny for a very posh person to, excuse me, do you have any saline for my balls?
Like after a dinner. Hell. That's mad. Oof. I mean, that's like... That's fucking Marilyn Manson shit to do.
Yeah. Maz says, I was spared having to witness this, so I can't confirm how successful the experiment was, but he told me it was great fun.
No.
You got away with fun, it. Having massive knackers.
And pickled sperm.
I don't know if... Surely the injection is into the bag, not the nut.
Ugh.
Surely.
Fuck! I hate this!
Yeah, I knew you wouldn't like it. None of my friends liked him, and if you asked him what he did for a living, he'd say he was in property. He was an estate agent.
Blech! Yuck. Right.
You are probably wondering what I saw in him. Yes.
Saline. So, with an x-ray.
You just low in salt. You're probably wondering what I saw in him. Well, he was incredibly good looking and lived cheaply in a flat his parents owned just off Oxford Street.
Yeah, love is a complex thing.
He didn't actually need to work, but his mum made him. Yeah. I lived a fair way out of London then, so it was like having a hotel to stumble back to after every night out.
That is handy. That yeah. is handy. Yeah. No, I completely understand.
She says, we were watching a film one Sunday morning and he paused it to go to the loo. He was gone for so long, I started reading a book.
Did he take a syringe in with him, perchance?
And a big thing of table salt.
just a pack of Malden.
Yeah.
I'll be back in a bit.
Eventually, he came back looking very upset and asked me if I knew what the symptoms were of serious intestinal conditions. He also wanted me to look at something coming out of his anus. I did not want to look at his anus, and I was quite certain that whatever was going on, he had caused it. Yes. I was, of course, correct, and figured it out after a minor investigation and without having to examine his anus.
Okay.
So that's impressive. That's like Columbo doesn't even need to see the scene of the crime. He can tell you from behind the door what's gone on.
And what is it? The
previous day, he had gone to a fancy deli and brought several slices of prosciutto. He arrived home, and standing in his kitchen with no plate or accompaniment, he just ripped the slices apart and gobbled half the pack down like a big dog, hardly chewing the meat at all.
Oh, God. I have a feeling where this is going, and I really hope I'm not correct.
He hadn't noticed the layer of cling film between each slice.
Oh, fuck. Okay, I didn't. That was not what I was expecting.
Yeah. Later, halfway through pooing, he realized something was stuck hanging out of him. He reached down and pulled out a long bit of poopy cling film from his bum, believing his insides were painlessly but shockingly falling out. Just sheets of intestine.
Perfectly rectangular.
Oh my God, no! What? No!
That's so funny.
I like to imagine him saying no in that weird rounded London way. No.
Oh no. No.
He pooed a bit more and then another strip began to emerge. With every centimeter he pulled out, he became increasingly convinced he was going to die. So he tucked the dangling bumworm into his pants and decided to come out and ask for help.
Fucking hell. I mean, well done figuring out, man. Because like, without the context of what he'd been eating the day before, it's a surprise.
It's very Holmesian.
It'd be hot.
What have you eaten?
Yes.
Wait a minute. Maz says, once I'd Columbo'd... Once I'd Columbo'd the situation out, he went back to the bathroom to clean up, and I got back to my book.
Very cool.
Koji Maz. P.S., in case you're wondering how it ended, he dumped me a few weeks later, assuring me, unprompted, that it was nothing to do with my skin color for, quote, his grandfather had once taken an Indian lover.
Fucking hell.
And he didn't think there was anything wrong with it. I'm not Indian, although I didn't respond with an okay thank you. I was completely dumbfounded.
Taken an Indian lover.
Bold of him to dump someone who was willing to help him with his bum cling film.
Yeah, I mean, good luck finding someone else who's that kind or committed.
And clever.
Yeah, well, that's a great email, Maz. Thank you so much. That had sort of everything, that email.
It was all in there.
It really was all in there. That's great. And I think maybe one of my favorite of the many, many poo stories we've received, that one. I really like that one.
Yeah, it was high on farce and low on trauma.
That's it. Everyone sort of comes out of it fine. But the second act, as it were, is really astonishing, really good.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Well, that's all the time we have. Thank you for your correspondence. All really great, as ever. If you want to watch me on anything currently, I'm currently on the current series of Outsiders on Dave, which is on every Wednesday night on Dave. It's a really great cast. It's a great fun show. We do a bunch of tricky challenges in the forest, in a campsite. It's really fun. So in the woods, the scary woods. So do watch it. Outsiders.
Do watch anything it, please, for the love of God. And do... if you're still wanting to come see my Soho Theatre Show. Soho Theatre Show, January the 30th to February the 4th. Certain popular evenings are very close to selling out. Bye, bye, bye. Go, go, go.
Go, go, go. All right. Cheers, guys. So we're going to go now into... Where is it this week? Into the bonus area. The Patreon. The secret Patreon area. We'll figure it out what it is.
Yeah.
But do sign up to the Patreon. Otherwise, we'll see you next week.
See you next week. Bye.
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 Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.